This is Not Quite Dead,
a Gal Pal horror movie discussion podcast.
We do deep dives on our favorite scary movies.
But sometimes we really just like to keep it shallow.
I'm your host, Kate.
I'm Megan.
Get ready for all the spoilers. This is one of those movies that I'm always embarrassed to admit I had never seen before. And so I was very glad that this is the first movie that we're covering this season so that I can finally not feel so much shame in my daily life.
Yeah, it's super culturally relevant. I totally hear you. I get what you're saying. I've seen it a couple times, but it just hasn't stuck with me, I guess, because I haven't taken copious notes before. So it was nice to revisit it and be a little more studious of what's going on. It was cool to watch it with you for the first time.
It was. I love watching movies with a friend. I especially love watching movies that I haven't seen before and the person I'm with has seen it. I always think that that's a fun dynamic.
We are talking Night of the Living Dead, which came out in 1968. It is a classic zombie horror movie, and it's what a lot of people think of when they think zombie movie. It really defined the genre.
There's no way that we could have done a zombie season and not done Night of the Living Dead.
No, of course not.
It's absolutely essential watching. It is so obvious, like from watching it, how it has impacted other zombie and just horror movies in general from that time period on. But also, it was a huge, huge sensational hit, amazingly, when it came out in 1968.
It was also very gory for the time, which is very funny when you watch it.
I was genuinely surprised at how gruesome like some of the scenes were. It was shocking.
Yeah, it looks like they're just eating like whole steaks at one point. And it's so gross listening to them chew. Yeah, there's some really gross stuff happening in this. And it looks so much older than it really is. It looks completely like it doesn't belong in its time. Right. But it is a 1968 film. It was directed by George Romero. He is like the father of zombie movies, a big pioneer in the horror genre.
I think that George Romero's background is really interesting because we started watching this movie and I was like, this looks like the oldest movie ever made.
Ever made. Yeah.
There's so many things about it that looks
somehow
so
older than Nosferatu.
The aspect ratio. I know, right? Like, it feels like it fits in really well with those like old, like 1920s, 1930s, like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari style.
Yeah.
But no, 1968, George Romero at this point had done kind of a random assortment of things. They mentioned like industry films, and that's kind of like, you know, safety videos or like how-to videos for, you know, manufacturing. He did some Mr. Rogers Neighborhood segments.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was all over the place and specifically used guerrilla filmmaking techniques that he did like on these other industrial films. So lots of handheld cameras, like lots of shaky things. They wanted to try and get the budget as absolutely low as possible. I think the total budget for this was like $115,000.
Oh,
which
wow.
Is like nothing. They didn't have the budget for a set. And so they actually rented a condemned farmhouse.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
That they just destroyed during the course of filming.
So, Kate, adjusted for inflation, that budget is $1,006,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, it's not like the $15,000 like Skinamarink that we've seen.
Oh boy.
Or Paranormal Activity. So
Yeah.
It's definitely like, it definitely had a budget, but it made, and this is not adjusted, it made in 1968 $15 million domestic.
People were hungry for zombies.
Oh my gosh, they loved it. Yeah. I mean, I think it must have been one of those like so shocking that you like have to see it so that you can be outraged by it, but also so that some people can love it.
And this has a really high Rotten Tomatoes rating. It's 95%. Which I think is retrospect. Yes. I'm not sure what it was at the time. But it's very high. It's a very well-respected movie.
At the time, there was a lot of controversy. Mm-hmm. We mentioned how kind of gory it is. But critics did acknowledge that it was groundbreaking for the genre because there just wasn't horror like this before.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that with the benefit of history and additional context, yeah, the Rotten Tomatoes score is definitely like looking back retroactively, mm-hmm. and has been gathered from the hundreds, if not thousands, of positive reviews in the 50 plus years,
yeah,
since it came out.
And speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, Kate and I really would like to become Rotten Tomatoes certified. We think our opinions are just as great, if not better, than what you already see over at Rotten Tomatoes. So in order to do that, we need you guys to head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a rating. Once we have enough ratings there, we can apply to become certified. So make sure you take a minute to go do that for us, please.
So what else was happening in 1968? It was a good year for movies.
Big year.
Not a great year for other things.
No. No, but big. I think big is a good word for 1968. I imagine it's how a lot of Americans also feel about like 2020 or 2001.
2001. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's a big year.
Yes. In the Wikipedia page for 1968, there's this quote I had to write down that I'm going to paraphrase here, that 1968 was considered to be one of the most turbulent and traumatic years in America in the 20th century.
Jeez. Yeah, that sounds about right.
I mean, the Vietnam War was just a total disaster. It was the most number of troops ever deployed in American history. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated.
Woof.
RFK was assassinated. It was a grim, awful time in America. It just seemed very hopeless.
And weren't we in the middle of some civil rights movements? I mean, right, like Martin Luther King was assassinated, so the answer to that is yes. We were not happy in America.
No, I think it was definitely a time of sea change, and I do think it's so interesting to think about that in the context of this movie. We don't always go into, you know, what's going on historically, but I do like looking back when we're watching something so seminal like this, especially because the main character is a Black man. And I do think it's culturally relevant to bring up the civil rights movement.
It is. And you know what's so interesting about him casting a Black man in this lead role is that had never happened before. He was in this movie with all white people. And he was the leading man. He makes it to the end. But George Romero did not make a point of casting a Black man. He was just the best for the role. He auditioned the best. The role was not written specifically for a Black man. It was ambiguous, other than the fact that it was a man. Yeah, Dwayne Jones just earned it. He was that good. How does that color this movie, knowing that it is a Black man and he does pretty much all the right things and he's treated pretty fairly by the group, but it wasn't really intended to make that kind of statement by hiring him? I feel like it kind of does anyway, but it's interesting knowing that that wasn't the original purpose.
I know, right? That's like the question of like, authorial intent, right? Almost where it's like, okay, George Romero didn't intend to make a statement, by casting Dwayne Jones as Ben in this movie, but the statement is made nonetheless mm-hmm. because his race is never a factor. It is never brought up. No one's challenging him. I was so nervous when this character came on screen because I did not know anything about this movie. Honestly, don't know very much about George Romero.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I don't know if this guy is super racist and like is going to portray this character really badly, or if he's going to be like ambiently historical racist where they're going to like make some unintentional like racist commentary around him. But no, it was just played totally straight. I mean, they obviously didn't change the script once they cast a black man, which is great. So I do think that it's showing positive intent, right?
Mm-hmm.
To like from George Romero, like even if he didn't intend it to be like a positive portrayal of a black man, that is still why he gave the culture.
Which was probably needed at the time.
I think so. I mean, this was such a big year for movies, and I think that having a black man in a leading role as like a true protagonist, like he's like the person pulling this group through through this movie.
I don't know how he does it. I mean, yeah, we'll definitely talk about that more when we get into our character overviews, but oh my gosh, we talked about how old this movie looks. When you compare it to some of the other stuff that has come out the same year, it's even worse. It's unreal to me that this came out in 1968, considering.
I know, it's pretty hilarious. So just a sampling of other movies that came out this year. I'm going to lead with a bang, which is 2001 A Space Odyssey also Amazing. Came out in 1968.
It's which gorgeous.
Literally light years.
Yeah.
ahead.
What a monolith of a film.
I mean, people were getting really creative with special effects. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang
right.
came out, which has, you know, such a blend of special effects and animation. Just a lot going on in that one. Also, in the horror category, Rosemary's Baby came out in 1968.
Which we've talked about. And to me, when I see that movie, I'm like, okay, that's a 60s movie. Like, that looks like a...
Totally.
Yeah. This looks like... I guess they're wearing 60s clothes, but stylistically, and I would say quality-wise, it feels like maybe 50s max. It just doesn't...
Max?
Yeah. Just feels old.
It feels like it was on a wartime budget.
Which I guess, in a way, it was. The budget for Space Odyssey, to compare, was over $10 million. Like,
oh my God.
That's a big difference in budget.
That is huge. Oh my God. But Stanley Kubrick is like such a monster when it comes to like
I know.
Knowing exactly what he wants, right? He's such an auteur. I mean, it's like the difference in filmmaking between like Darren Aronofsky and like when Lars von Trier was doing his like Dogma 95 stuff. Like yeah. it's just like a different approach yeah. to filmmaking.
Okay, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was also $10 million.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Right. I think
Okay.
yeah. Like okay, but side note, it's really hard for me to imagine that those two movies had the same budget. I guess because of the animation, and I think there's like the car flies around, right?
But yeah, I also think that the actors in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang were true. Probably paid a little bit more too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and Rosemary's Baby was only $3.2 million, which I believe.
Well, most of Rosemary's Baby is extreme close-up shots of Mia Farrow's horror-stricken face. So I do understand why that right. one's maybe a little bit cheaper.
Right. It makes sense. But wow, what a vast difference from Night of the Living Dead. So I used to think of Night of the Living Dead as the first zombie movie. I don't know how you thought about it, before watching it?
I did think of it as the first zombie movie. If you're about to tell me that there are other zombie movies, I will be genuinely surprised.
Okay. Well, that's great, because I am about to tell you that the zombie genre is not new in 1968. You could say it kicked off in 1932 with White Zombie, starring Bela Lugosi. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed, but in this movie, they never refer to the living dead as zombies. They never use that word.
I did catch that. I was wondering if it wasn't in common parlance yet, but they call them ghouls, which I do love.
Ghouls, right. They literally are just the dead rising. Now, the word zombie was used to refer to like a voodooism version of raising the dead. Hmm. But the difference, you know, the major difference is that the voodooism that's involved is controlling the zombies. Like whoever the necromancer is controls those that they raise. Whereas these zombies are just, they're brought to life by some unknown thing and they're crazed and, you know, eating people and wild, right? They're just like wild animals. But yeah, like early zombie movies were voodoo centric. So it didn't make sense to George Romero to refer to them as zombies. They were not standard zombies that the audience would have been used to.
That is so interesting, because I feel like now we use zombie as such a giant catch-all.
Mm-hmm.
And something I'm excited for in this season is we are going to be in each movie talking about the different zombie traits.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to what we did in our vampire season, where we're assessing the traits that we see across each movie, how they're representing zombies or ghouls, as they call them in this one, because there are different approaches to it. But there are some things that I think has a lot of overlap. But I do think that that's very surprising that there's such a heavy voodoo element in the originals.
Yeah. That's kind of where the idea of zombieism came from. And so it's interesting about this movie, because it basically neutralized that. Like, it took that cultural reference and just removed it. Now this, as anybody can be a zombie. You don't have to be, because they were usually depicted as black, or like within like their black centric films, right? Specifically because of the voodooism. I don't know, you could say White Zombie's a little bit appropriating. It's a white guy trying to get his there's a white guy necromancer practicing voodoo and trying to get this girl to love him.
We're gonna have to add that movie to our wild card season list.
Totally. Yeah. And so it kind of removed those connotations and just was like, yep, anyone can be a zombie because it's caused by some sort of weird thing. I guess in this movie they went with radiation in this one.
The radiation thing I thought was so funny, because I was like, oh, is there still some kind of like space race panic happening here? Because the idea of radiation from satellites around Venus.
Oh my gosh, it was so like funny.
Very, very specific and bizarre.
Very bizarre. Yeah. I was like, why is that the route they went? And then you think like, oh, well, what had been going on at the time? You know, space exploration was so new. And so, of course, people would want to stoke that fear, right? Who knows what's going to happen when we go into space? What are we going to trigger? And it's not radiation. Or at least it hasn't been, I think. So this isn't the first zombie movie, but it is the first modern zombie movie. It really changed what being a zombie meant in film and set the tone, set the stage for zombie movies afterwards.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Romero.
I know.
So much good content now.
Well, should we do a quick plot summary so we can dive into some zombie traits and character traits?
Definitely. I'm going to keep this one pretty short because this movie is pretty quick.
It is.
It's only an hour and a half. They fit a lot in, but we essentially have seven people trapped in a cabin as they are fending off the reanimated dead. We have the characters that we start the movie with, Barbara and Johnny, brother and sister, who have driven all the way to Pennsylvania to, of course, leave some flowers on a grave. Perfect setting for a zombie movie. They flee. Johnny doesn't make it, but Barbara makes it to this cabin where she meets Ben, plus two other couples and one of the couple's daughter. And what proceeds is this group trying to stay alive through the onslaught of zombies attacking the cabin, plus their own internal drama amongst themselves too. The daughter is sick in the basement. You know, some of these people were upstairs trying to fend off zombies, not even aware that there were people in the basement. It's like kind of a lot. And the great thing about this movie is it does not shy away from grotesqueness, nor does it shy away from main character death, which is also feels very refreshing and very modern, even though this came out in 1968. So I will cap it there because some of the elements, like the ending of the movie, I want to get into in more detail later. So I think we should talk about the characters.
Totally. I guess we have to start with Johnny because, I don't know, he gets it first. Let's get him out of the way. And his death is super lame.
Oh, Johnny. Johnny and Barbara, yeah. Brother and sister. Johnny sucks. I was like, this guy only knows how to complain. He is complaining about this 3-hour drive that they had to make to leave flowers on their parents' grave. And they've been there for like 4 seconds when he's like, can we hurry
can
it
we
up?
Go?
I want to go home. Yeah. He like, what?
Like, don't you want to stretch dick, your right? legs at least for crying out loud?
Yeah. He's awful.
Yeah. He totally deserved it. He's teasing Barbara. Apparently they used to like visit this cemetery as children and fool around, I guess, like scare each other. And he starts scaring her again, which I was like, Barbara, get it together. You're such a baby. He just, what he's doing is very juvenile. And he kind of chases her and is a little like rude talking about the caretaker, which is why Barbara goes over to say, you know, I'm so sorry, my brother's being a dick. But the caretaker is actually a zombie and lunges her. Johnny steps in to try to help. And then he like he has the most pitiful death I've ever seen on screen, I think. He just like trips and falls and hits his head on the gravestone. And that's it. That's
and
all
it
took.
So like kind of gentle, like so much of this movie is kind of gentle until it's not. Like they're fighting the falling, maybe because they're not doing a lot of sound effects around those things, but like I didn't realize that like that's how he died until
right
like, thinking about it now, and I was like, oh, that's how he died, like,
where did he
like, that's
go
crazy.
You know, she's running away and I'm like, wait, where's Johnny? He just fell, he can get up, right? Like, nope, he's dead.
I know, awful.
Barbara, so now we're moving on to Barbara, and boy is she useless. I can't stand her in this movie, and she's in it for so much.
Barbara is like our second lead in this movie, and she also sucks. At first I was like, oh, she's so hampered by her horrible brother, and then she as a character is just the most useless woman,
so useless,
I've ever seen. She just opts not to speak for like the first third of the movie, like after her brother dies,
which is crazy because his death was so boring. What is it that traumatized her? just him falling and not getting up. I mean, she didn't see him being eaten or murdered. He just fell.
I know. She has such a delicate disposition so that it delicate. Seems like anything could like put her into this state. I'm like so paranoid about like the race stuff in like 1960s movies that I was like, is she racist? Is this why she's not talking to Ben? I like he was talking to her.
Yeah.
And she was just not answering. Like I started keeping a running tally of all of the questions that he asked her that she never answered. Yeah.
Please. I want to hear them.
Few. Okay. Do you live here? She didn't answer.
She just stares at him. Actually, she doesn't even stare at him. She stares off into space.
No. Stares off into space. He starts to board up the house, the cabin, and he's like, can you get wood? Can you go get nails? Like, she doesn't. She just sits there.
He does everything.
He asks her about Beekman's Diner and what happened there, and she's just unresponsive. There's more. These are just a few questions that I wrote down, but there were so many questions he asked her that she just catatonically stared off into space instead of responding to.
I wrote down a list of things that Ben does while she does nothing because I was like, this dude. Ben gets into the house and Barbara is still useless, traumatized. Ben kills the zombies outside. Ben saves Barbara. Ben thinks to close the door. Ben tosses the body and lights it on fire. Ben gives direction to board up the house, which is what you're talking about. And she does none of these things. Like, she does nothing to help him with any of these things. And then he has to sit there and, like, try and talk to her. And was like, this guy must be going crazy dealing with this woman. Because I would be.
It seems like she only perks up and, like, starts answering questions and things when the other couples come into the mix. When it's just her and Ben, she just is, like, out of it.
Yeah.
She eventually rouses to say, like, it was horrible. It was horrible. But, like, it's just nothing. Like, it's she's not helpful. She's not trying to problem solve.
Yeah.
Like, she is just – she should just be zombie fodder.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like, she's just going to weigh everybody down.
Just throw her outside. I know. We've spent too much time watching, like, Walking Dead. To know.
I know.
Like, don't deal with this woman. It's a waste of your time.
I know, right? Like, you guys are eventually going to have to start your own farm, and she's not going to help. So.
I just feed her to the zombies. So, obviously, we've been talking about Ben. Ben, as a character, is resourceful and useful. And he's very caring. Like, he actually does care about Barbara and helping her. In fact, he puts up a big fight later in the movie when the people boarded up downstairs don't come up to help, hearing her screams.
Ben is so on top of it, mm-hmm. in that not only is he willing to, like, defend the cabin and, like, board it up, make it secure, but he's also the one who comes up with the plan to try and go get medical supplies for the daughter,
mm-hmm.
Which is, like, what actually does cause a lot of chaos, yeah. and a lot of death. Because he has this, like, great little, like, safe place that he's, like, kind of created for them, and then he's like, okay, well, we're gonna have to, like, leave and go get in the truck and go get gas and then go get medical supplies, mm-hmm. and so it's, like, kind of a double-edged sword. His kindness and his resourcefulness is, like, a double-edged sword. Like, he kept them all alive much longer than they would have been otherwise. But he did also kind of put them into a situation where then a lot of them died.
I know. The movie sets you up to be like, oh, Ben's going to save the day. Ben's the greatest. And then I like, blink and all of a sudden everything's on fire. It's just a disaster area. What happened, Ben?
Total disaster.
I wrote down, so was Ben wrong in trying to get out, or did they all just suck at it?
I mean, I think they would have needed to get out eventually anyway, but I think trying to get out that night was maybe not
yeah
the vibe. They should have just waited until the morning.
Not the vibe, honestly. At all.
Like, I don't know why they had to do it in the middle of the night.
No, no, absolutely not. Especially with Barbara the way she was. I was like, this group needs to take a nap.
This is like a transition point to talk about this like mini family mm-hmm. that like has isolated themselves in the basement mm-hmm. for several points of this movie. So this is the Cooper family. There's mom and a dad, and then there's a daughter who's ill. Mm-hmm. And then you learn that she was bitten.
Yeah.
And these idiots are like, well, she's just sick.
Right.
She's obviously not dead. And I'm like, oh, you haven't seen zombie movies. Like, I've seen zombie movies. Need to put a bullet through her brain right now.
Yep.
Like, that's how this works.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because that hasn't actually been established in this movie that biting is what causes somebody to be a zombie. It's really just when they die. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You just come back. Like, if you die, you turn into a zombie. But the bite makes her sick enough where she dies from the infection and then becomes a zombie. But yeah, like, that's a new thing for this genre, right? The biting causing death like that. But yeah, she didn't look so good. They needed a spiker early. The Coopers... I don't know how I feel about the Coopers. The wife seemed to be pretty logical, sensical. She's like, you mean there was information provided to us upstairs from a governing authority and you locked us down here away from it so we can just stay clueless in the dark?
That's so true. I would be so mad if I was like, you decided to keep us down here away from the radio yeah. and the TV. That would be pretty annoying.
Ridiculous. And Mr. Cooper is a bit hot-headed.
I did not, like, connect with these characters very much. I gotta be honest, I didn't connect with a lot of these characters, except for Ben. I was like, Ben.
Poor Ben.
Come on. Like, you're putting a lot on the line for these people that you don't even know.
I know. He's so nice. He just wants to help everybody. Okay, I did want to ask you though, because Mr. and Mrs. Cooper and the gang all stay downstairs when they hear Barbara shrieking upstairs, right? She's been attacked and Ben has to come save her because he has to do everything. And Ben confronts Mr. Cooper and is like, hey, you heard her screaming. Why didn't you come up and help? What the heck? So what would you have done, Kate, if you were Mr. Cooper? Would you have come up to help Barbara?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, like, honestly, no. If I had heard and seen that there was like this mass murder panic gripping the nation and I was hiding with my little family of three in a pretty secure basement and I heard screaming upstairs, absolutely not. Like, do you feel differently?
No, I thought Ben was a little unreasonable. I was like, no, Ben, why should they come up? The whole world's gone to hell. I wouldn't want to come up either.
I think that it's that like overly optimistic outlook that Ben has that's like what kills him.
Yeah.
Sorry, spoilers for the ending.
I know. We did warn you in our intro. But yeah, Ben, it's so funny because Ben has his great plan to go out and get some medicine. And then again, like after all that fails, he's just at home and like looks out the window and gets shot in the middle of the forehead. Like him being trusting, like, I don't know, trusting in the process or trusting in society and each other, right? Like things are going to work out. Like that didn't help him.
Not at all.
There's a couple other people in the basement as well.
Mm-hmm. Tom and Judy.
I think I said 1960s Zac Efron and girlfriend. That's what I had said.
Yeah, they seem like a little younger, mm-hmm. little like, yeah, definitely more in the 1960s. Like she's got her hair down. Mm-hmm. That's how I always think of it. I'm like, all right, we've got our character with her hair down. You know, Tom and Judy are the ones who go with Ben to mm-hmm. leave. To go try and get medical supplies.
Yeah.
So
young and optimistic.
I mean, I will say we're talking about the characters. We haven't really been talking about the actors.
Oh, true.
A lot of these actors did not have illustrious film careers before or after this movie. And so I will specifically call out Judith Ridley, who played Judy. She was only 19.
Oh, wow.
She originally auditioned for the role of Barbara, but she had literally zero acting experience. And so George Romero cast her as Judy because he was like, this is a less demanding role. So I'm still going to cast you.
Oh, my gosh. Was it Slim Pickens
just
or
not
something?
For the lead.
Because she was kind of wooden.
Maybe with her budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Must have been. She was also very empty. I think she was probably the most empty out of the female characters. Like.
Yeah. I mean, she just seems like what an average person in a zombie apocalypse would be like. You know, she and her partner heard about what was going on and felt like they needed to take refuge somewhere and ended up in this cabin. So, like, sure. They're just kind of the additional people rounding out this group.
Right. There's this very weird interaction where he comes into the room. He's about to go and help out Ben. And he just looks at her and he's like, you have a smile for me. How can you have a smile for me when all this is happening? It's such a weird line. And her response really says a lot about who she is as a character. She's like, why do you have to go? We should just stay here. And he's like, well, we can't do that forever. Like, we have to do something. And she's like, I know, but, and like, that's it. Like, it just trails off like, yep, this girl has no plan. she can talk and move around, but she's still pretty useless.
Yeah. She is just like one notch above Barbara at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And then she's the one that gets them trapped in the car that explodes.
Yes. Man, the women in this movie are not helpful.
Oh, my God. Kate, there's a super funny line. It made me laugh out loud when Mr. Cooper is like, we can't go anywhere. Look, we've got, there's the three of us. We've got two women and one... And like one nutcase or whatever he says about her, and then a sick child. I just love how the women, like just the fact that there are women, it's like, nope, we can't do anything. This is a big burden. This is a big albatross around our necks, these women, which to be fair, they are kind of useless in this movie in general. Oh my.
I feel like a whole category of character that we have is the zombies. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And there are a lot of them. There's a ton of zombies. And like, you know, the people inside the house are not making noise, really. Like, I think they're pretty quiet. But the zombies in this movie are like, it doesn't matter. There's still people in this house and we want them. Like, they still swarm this house. Which I thought was interesting because you don't see that as much, I think, in newer stuff. Like, zombies tend to be attracted to sound. But yeah, the zombies as a character is a good call out because we have a whole list of traits that this movie has to say about what a zombie is.
I was really surprised at the beginning of this movie when Johnny and Barbara got attacked in the cemetery because I thought they were just being attacked by a man. I didn't realize he was a zombie.
I mean, right. That's what Barbara thought. Must have been so confusing.
I did like that there are different kind of levels of zombification in this movie. And while we were watching it, you had a really good call out on why you thought that maybe some of them looked, you know, more human versus others.
Yeah. When they're collecting, especially at night, you start seeing more and more zombies in different states of what looks to be decay. And so it seems like the more decayed they are, this is what I was noticing, the more decayed they are, the slower they move, the less intelligent they seem. You know, they're kind of just shambling around. And you know, this first guy we meet, this first zombie caretaker, he doesn't look bad. He doesn't look mangled or like he's been dead for very long. He just looks a little sallow. And he's pretty fast for a zombie. I mean, he's not sprinting or anything, but he's walking, other than balance issues, he's walking like a normal person would walk and at a pretty normal speed. So that's how I took it.
Definitely. Such a good call out. I totally am just buying that as like the reasoning behind the differences in these zombies, because a lot of the ones that we see at the beginning, they're strong,
mm-hmm.
they're fast, yeah. and they seem pretty smart. Like this zombie at the beginning and some zombies later, they're using tools to get in this
right. place.
Like they're grabbing rocks to break windows.
They're like apes.
Like, yeah, they're actively chasing. They're not that like mindless zombie that we see in some of the other zombies later in the movie.
Right. And they talk about in the movie that a bunch of them group up and like flip a car, right? They don't just clamber on and try to get in without thinking. They like think of ways to get the people out of things and destroy things so that they can't get away. Like they take out the headlights with rocks. That'd be scary.
It's so scary.
Yeah. I have a question for you based on this. So I know we said that these are kind of fast zombies, but when I think fast zombies, I think like running, like sprinting zombies after you, right? So I have to ask you, like, what would be worse to deal with? Fast zombies or smart zombies?
I'm going to go with smart zombies. I would rather try and trick and outrun a fast zombie than I would trying to outsmart a smart zombie. Because what if I'm like the same level of smart as the zombie?
Oh no. That's a different problem. But yeah.
Like, I mean, I understand the concept of using tools, but do I use tools? No.
Kate just stands there and wills the zombies to go away. I think I agree with you. I think I would have a better shot dealing with fast zombies than smart ones. I mean, if they're smart, they can develop a culture. And when you can develop a culture, then you can start really like changing things, right? You can like really hive minded up and mess with your enemies. Fast zombies, like, I guess, you know, if I can get past the first set of zombies like in a car or something, I might have a decent shot if I go find a place to hole up. But smart zombies are in it for the long game. And that's scarier, I think.
One of George Romero's inspirations for this movie was the book I Am Legend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which you mentioned, you know, mm-hmm. if they're smart, they can become a culture, mm-hmm. which is totally the plot of I Am Legend. I really like how they used, and I'm using really like a little bit ironically, how they use the news to convey a lot of exposition to us about these movies. Because they say in the news reports that they, you know, can be ordinary looking. They can be ghoulish. There's a variety of types. Mm-hmm. I love that they call them ghastly ghouls on the news. Can you imagine if you were watching like MSNBC and they were like, a ghastly horde of ghouls is spreading across America? You would be like, what
century is this? Ghastly. Oh, the alliteration is just top tier.
I know, right? But they also tell us some ways that these zombies can be killed.
Yeah, it's important.
Yes. So one of the ways is head or brain destroyed. Classic.
Yeah. I think this might be, is this like, this could be like the first time we've seen that. They specifically say, because the radiation has affected their brain, you need to take the brain out. It's like, all right, I guess. Yeah, the lack of headshots in this movie was starting to bother me. I was like, you guys just watch this on the news. Go for the heads.
I know, right? They do also mention making sure to burn your dead.
Yes.
You know, burn the bodies before they can turn.
Right.
Which is interesting because the news also says that it can take minutes for them to turn. So it's not like a long process, but it's also not instantaneous. So there's a brief window of time between dying and turning into a zombie, mm-hmm. I would imagine.
Right. But that's still pretty quick. I know the daughter changes real quick when she goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder, maybe it's a variety too. Maybe some do take longer to turn because they're more decayed or,
yeah,
you know, if they're in the ground, maybe it's taking longer for the radiation to get to them to reactivate them.
Right. The news also tells us that they eat people. They are essentially cannibals. I did not understand why the daughter goes after her mom with like a garden hoe or a garden shovel. Just stabs her mom. I was like, why isn't she trying to eat her? Why is she just murdering her? What did mom do?
It seems so personal.
Yeah. What a horrible way to go. And of course, the mom is just like, help. I can't do anything to deal with this because she's a useless woman, as we've learned. The only other trait that I noticed was that the zombies seemed to get angry. They didn't just get stopped by something and keep trying to deal with it mindlessly. Like, they had feelings. When the caretaker is chasing Barbara, he like kind of gets strung up on a clothesline and gets mad and like throws it to the ground, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if we see that anymore, but I noted it because I thought it was odd.
Oh yeah, that's a great point. I didn't totally absorb that. So yeah, I don't think that you see that in zombie movies these days. They're typically pretty mindless.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that was it. I mean, these zombies are pretty smart. It's interesting. I guess that makes sense when you consider the context of what a zombie used to be and kind of what he's transitioning it into. Zombies just used to be like brought under control, right, by a necromancer, and so could still have a lot of facilities. They just are being controlled. So maybe that's why they weren't so mindless in this movie. I don't know, just a guess.
Well, now that we've learned so much about the zombies in this movie, I have a question for you.
Ooh.
Which is, what weapon, if you could choose any weapon, would you take into a zombie apocalypse?
I think I'd have to learn how to shoot a gun, which is kind of tough. Like, I mean, a gun comes with its own issues. You have to have enough bullets. You can run out of bullets. So that's an issue. But having to stab somebody like through the skull, and then not only that, but wrench it out so that you can reuse it. Oh, man, I'd get so tired. I feel like I would just die of being tired because they'd get me. What about you? What would you take?
See, the like bullet issue with guns like always gets me because I feel like in every zombie adaptation, there's always like, all right, we got to go find more ammo. Like, there's always like a, oh, we got to go into this neighborhood and like loot all these houses for ammo. And the houses are always full of zombies.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I want like a weapon that doesn't need to be reloaded or maintained too much. So I would pick a machete.
Ooh.
Because I would hope that I could go through the neck.
Oh, yeah.
Or like through the top of the head. Because at least if you separate the head from the body.
Yeah.
You can then deal with the head.
Yeah, that's true. It might be easier to chop through the neck.
it's still like that puts you in very close contact with zombies though.
Yeah.
So like I don't love that either.
There really is no good choice. You kind of need a giant lance, but you know, then you have to be able to pull it out of the head. I don't know what the right answer is here.
And we learn in this movie that you can't just like Molotov cocktail zombies because
they tried.
You will like eventually kill yourself.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. When your jacket gets stuck on the seatbelt and you can't get out of the car in time, it'll blow up on you.
So this is a horror movie and there are some horror scenes, some pretty scary scenes, I thought at least. What did you think of the horror in this movie?
The horror was interesting because the movie is so quiet. There's no music and nobody screams except Barbara. When the zombies are like digging through the house trying to get in, the men just sort of go over and quietly like push them out. It's like almost totally silent other than like their size of exertion, right? But it's just like a quiet, creeping attack. You know, like there's nothing giving the zombies location away really until they start coming at you and nobody screams. And that I found pretty unsettling, weird for a horror movie.
Totally get it. A lot of the scuffling was very quiet. But sometimes the music was like really like high, like theatrical, like true, like theater. Like silent film like style music, which is really jarring. I thought that even though this movie was very quick, it was an hour and a half, the pacing was a little weird in some spots. So I felt like it diffused the tension. So it didn't have that style of horror for me. Like when the characters are just kind of like arguing with each other, I never felt like they were gonna turn on each other. Like it just didn't feel like that's where it was going.
Yeah,
it was like we were just waiting for the zombies to like figure out that they're in the house.
Right.
I did like the special effects. I thought that for its time and its shoestring budget that the reveal of the actual owner of the house on like the stairwell or something, yeah, spooky.
That was a good one. That was good.
Was good.
I liked that they showed the zombies eating raw meat. I mean, I guess that was pretty scary. It just honestly looked like hamburger. It didn't look too disgusting, I thought. But I hated the sounds that they made. Like, because the movie's quiet, but you hear them smacking their lips on it and like chewing and tearing through meat. And I was like, ugh, this is so gross. I hate it. I don't know if that was scary for me or just something that I found unpleasant, but maybe that was the goal.
It is unsettling. I feel like even if it's not like scary, maybe to our sensibilities, like this seems like a thing where there would be newspapers saying like, oh, people vomiting in theaters from George Romero's latest movie, you know?
Yeah, totally.
What did you think was the scariest part in this movie for you?
That's a good question. Because I actually don't find this movie all that scary. I mean, it's got scary elements in it, but I myself was not scared by it. That being said, there's this moment that was a little tense for me when Barbara is still sitting there catatonic. She's by herself. And Ben is like, hey, I'm going to go upstairs. And I don't know what it is he's going to do. I think he's going to like rest or something. But he's basically leaving her alone. And she's been kind of crazy all movie. And when he leaves her alone, I was like, oh, my God, she's going to get up and like go outside and look for Johnny. Because that's what she's been talking about. And I was so scared that she was going to go make things even worse for this poor man and like open the doors. That doesn't happen. So it's not actually scary. But to me, that was like the tensest moment that I noticed.
That's such a good scene, too, because I was afraid she was being so weird.
Yeah.
I was like, did she actually like get bit?
Right.
Like, I was so like, is she actually like slowly dying? And that's why she's being so unresponsive. Mm-hmm. But no, she was just having a really bad trauma response. I think the scariest part for me was maybe not scary in like the tension or like taut feeling, but more like the unsettling nature was when the daughter is killing her mom by stabbing her.
Right.
There's like this like kind of echo scream effect that they're doing, or like, yeah, that like that sound effect was so, I was so like, ugh, about it. I was like, I just wanted to stop. Like, I don't want to have to listen to this like reverb scream that they're doing.
You're right. It was the only one like that. It was really interesting. I do remember that. Yeah, that was creepy.
I don't think it's scary, but I think it is kind of like a morbid reality, which is the ending of this movie.
Oh my gosh, I know. That's like the true horror of everyday life.
Right? It's like, it's not scary. It's like, I mean, it is a trope that we see in movies today. I mean, Get Out has the gotcha at the end of the police car coming up on the black guy. And in this one, you know, we've seen the Coopers die, the other couple, Tom and Trudy, they die in the fire, the car fire.
So right? Bizarre.
Like that whole scenario. Yeah. Horrible. Ben makes it back to the house. He's the only one alive. He hears sirens and he thinks he's saved because he's an optimist.
Yeah. And you think that Ben's going to be okay, right? Because Ben has been doing the right thing all movie. He takes care of business. He cares about Barbara, even though she's awful. And he like chastises other people in the house for not caring. He tries to get them to go out to get medicine. Like, this is a stand-up guy. And so he should survive, right? That's what Hollywood would lead you to believe. But
I would think.
Instead, he just kind of casually gets murdered.
Yeah, the police shoot him.
It's very anticlimactic, too.
I mean,
sad.
In a standard zombie apocalypse, there's probably a lot of civilian casualties.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, have you seen The Last of Us?
Yes, I have.
Okay. In season one of The Last of Us.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert for something very recent. Mm-hmm. Skip ahead by like 45 seconds. People are horrified when the scientist says you need to bomb every city that has an outbreak in it because this is going to be out of control.
Yeah.
And then the stinger is that they do eventually bomb like every single one of these like cities. Like, there's like a dozen plus cities that get bombed. Millions, if not a billion people dead just from these bombings. And it's still not enough to stop like, the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. So it's not surprising that it happened. I mean, these guys, like, they don't talk about it like, oops, this was an alive person. Let's hide it. They're just like, we got to kill everybody. Like, they assume it's a zombie because everyone's a zombie, it seems like, right? But boy, like, what was going to be their method to check? It just seems like, oh, we saw a guy in the window. We shoot him. Like, what? Why?
I know. It's so heartbreakingly tragic.
It is.
Like, you'd think that they would want to save some people, but I guess they're like, this is a cabin that's like 20 feet from a graveyard.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way.
We're not going to worry about this one. We're just going to take everyone out. Yeah. Like, what should Ben have done? I guess, like, waved a little white flag in the window, like a cartoon.
I know. It just seems like it's early days, like early days in the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Like, you stay put and you try and, like, make yourself as human as possible.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, white flag, a flag that says, like,
help.
I'm not a zombie.
Yeah.
You know, something help. Yeah. Something that shows that you can still, like, write and read.
Yeah. Poor Ben. Well, Kate, what did you think about this movie? It was your first time. It's a big deal of a movie, but did you enjoy it?
Not really.
Do tell.
I mean, I respect it as a, you know, cultural touchstone and what it did to kind of pique interest in the horror genre. I mean, obviously people love horror. I just think that I'm so spoiled on modern horror movies. I thought the pacing was kind of weird. The sound was weird. The music wasn't it for me. I really liked Ben as a character. All of the other characters were garbage. It felt a lot longer than its 96 minutes.
It did. It really did.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, I'm glad that I watched it because now I have that in my tool belt. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a favorite.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't watch it again. Unless I was with somebody who was like, oh, I really want to watch this for whatever reason. I think it's important to watch if you like horror movies and you want that cultural relevance. Go ahead and check it out. I don't think it's that enjoyable, though, to sit through anymore. Especially because of Barbara. Barbara makes the movie so painful for me that alone is like a reason for me to not really feel like watching this anymore. And I totally agree with you on the pacing. I was like, how does this movie feel so long? It's so short.
Yep. But I mean, go watch it.
Yeah. Good for the time, but I think it doesn't necessarily like compare to the new, like you said, new zombie takes that we see. It just doesn't feel as gripping or scary on its own without that cultural significance.
This year is our zombie year. So every month we will be coming out with an episode on zombie movies. Thanks for tuning in to our first episode on Night of the Living Dead. And come back in February and see what we've got going on then.
This was Not Quite Dead.
Check out our other episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at Not Quite Dead Podcast and on Twitter at NQD_podcast.
Follow our blog for bonus content at notquitedeadpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening.
And happy watching.